And we are live on Augusta Free Press on Facebook, Street Knowledge. I am Chris Graham, and I'm going to welcome Crystal Graham, who's a usual guest and slash co-host on our show. Today, she's going to be the focal point of this show. September, as we're wrapping up the month, has been and is Suicide Prevention Month. And Crystal has worked for a number of years as a suicide prevention advocate, trainer, and former state director of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And we thought with some alarming numbers we've seen coming out of the CDC related to the COVID-19 pandemic response, that we needed to use our platform here to talk about suicide prevention and what people can do to help loved ones through some difficult times. So Crystal, welcome to the show. We've seen the numbers. We've written on Augusta Free Press, the website, about the extent of the problem. It's alarming and probably even bigger challenge because, you know, people can't get out and maybe you can't go out, for example, and do the trainings you normally do. So just how much of a challenge is this, and how much of a scary situation are we in right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a collaborative effort among many suicide prevention organizations for the last 5 years or so to really bring down the suicide rate among all age groups. And unfortunately, that has not been the case. Numbers continue to rise. There is a lag in reporting on that, but with COVID-19 in particular, there have been some very scary increases for suicide attempts and suicide completions, unfortunately. And you can imagine that a lot of the same things that cause a suicide during normal times are just exacerbated during times when you're being asked to stay inside, you're being asked to social distance. You know, people who are already dealing with depression and anxiety, those are kind of being ramped up as a result of this pandemic. And it's not just in the United States, it's worldwide that this is unfortunately happening. And unfortunately, it's among all age groups. It's among young people, it's among veterans, and it's among senior citizens who are home alone. And in many cases, especially if they're home by themselves and they don't have a spouse or significant other, or they're not in a nursing home, they may not have any daily interaction right now.
You know, well, the numbers I've seen, we reported on this maybe about a month ago from the CDC. It's the most recent numbers we have, unfortunately. I think they do they update their numbers quarterly. Suicide ideation among different age groups was reported in a study from the CDC. 18 to 24 group, triple the number of suicide ideation described from just a year ago. The 25 to 49 group was close to double. All ages were up significantly, but young and I think older too, the senior population. The young, because I guess 18 to 24 would be the group of folks who's in a lot of cases, college educations or other educations have been disrupted. Their jobs probably disrupted. You know, that age cohort would be more likely, I would assume, to have the jobs in retail and restaurants that have been impacted. And then, of course, seniors, because, you know, they're the group most impacted actually by COVID itself. And so, you know, if you're trying to distance yourself from and perhaps prevent the spread of COVID to seniors who are maybe the most vulnerable, they're going to be seeing their family members and their loved ones less. So Crystal, if a person, and you know, let's bring some personal into this. You were reached out to just a few days ago by a friend who knew of a situation involving a teen that had attempted suicide. What advice in those kind of situations? What advice do you give to a parent, for example, to try to deal with this?
Yeah, it's so challenging, Chris. And as you know, the teen population is near and dear to my heart. Many of you know that my identical twin sister died by suicide at age 15. And that was before all the pressures that today's teenagers really face. I mean, it was before social media. And, you know, we just watched a special on Netflix, you know, a couple nights ago, and it deals with the fact that, you know, teenagers are constantly being bombarded by other people. And when a teenager might make an off the cuff remark, you know, some of us can deal with that. People who don't deal with mental health concerns maybe can deal with that and just slough it off. But there's many people who those kinds of things become very concerning. So, you know, yes, you did bring up the example. Because of my previous role in suicide prevention, As state director, I do often get inquiries from people, you know, when they're concerned about a loved one, or in this case, as you said, you know, this was a friend of a friend basically that reached out and said that a 15-year-old, a young girl, had made an attempt and had, you know, had been to the hospital and luckily made it through it, had been assigned to some inpatient care. That's pretty typical if you go through the emergency room, that you go to about a 3-day treatment plan. And then you're released, you know, generally speaking, especially in the cases of teens, to your parents. Otherwise, you're usually just released on your own. So certainly 3 days is not a lot of time for treatment. So you have to start thinking about, you know, what are the next steps? You know, so in this case, you know, here I'm talking with a mother whose daughter is going to be coming home in a matter of days, and she doesn't really know where to start. And so, you know, the first thing that I always say is really listen to the outtake person, you know, the person that you're dealing with when you go to pick up your son or daughter, you know, in the case of a teenager, because that person is probably going to give you a lot of useful information, especially in your own area. Because, you know, I'm very familiar with resources that are available in Stanton, Waynesboro, and Augusta County, but even when you stretch out to like Harrisonburg or somewhere like that, you know, I don't have quite the same connection. So I always say to listen to what the person is telling you on outtake. Connect with your community services board if you have one. And, you know, our region has some great community services board. They typically can get you in sooner, especially, you know, if your son or daughter is coming from a situation where they've been to the emergency room because of an attempt, they can usually get you in sooner than some private practices can. Because one of the things that's going to be most important is getting that person into some kind of long-term therapy. You know, and therapy is different for every single person. And so again, you have to find what works for your friend or your family member. But I think that the important thing is that there's some kind of therapy involved. And so some people are fine with group therapy, family therapy, or individual therapy. You know, I think that, you know, and Chris, we've had a lot of discussions about this because we've been touched by suicide and suicide attempts for a number of people in our circles too. But I think that one of the things to start with is, you know, this person needs someone who's going to listen to them, you know, without making judgment, without necessarily giving them advice. They just need somebody who's going to listen to what they have to say. And also keep in mind that, you know, even if it seems insignificant for you, maybe it's this online schooling is stressful. Maybe it's something that happened on social media that you don't think is a big deal. You know, it can be a very big deal to someone, even when it seems minimal to you. So my best advice is to really get some kind of therapy. And usually I would recommend that you start with some kind of individual therapy, and then you could always add on group therapy or family therapy. And the other thing is, to listen to your son or daughter. You know, if they're unhappy with their therapist for whatever reason, you just need to find them someone else. And it can be time consuming and it can take some time, but they're never going to feel comfortable with that person and sharing things unless it's somebody that they connect with. And, you know, in the case of my twin sister, she had been to see a psychologist. No medications were ever prescribed. No diagnosis was ever made, though we're pretty sure that she did deal with depression. But in this case, you know, they can come up with whatever diagnosis that they need. They can come up with the medication that is needed. And again, you just want to make sure that they connect with that person so that they can share, you know, what they're thinking. Because in many cases, that's just what they need, is someone that will listen to them.
Yeah, I mean, all those points of advice are so important. It's from the therapist level to the immediate level. I mean, you know, you were talking with me, Crystal, about, for example, in the case of a teen, like in this specific case, if this teen is able to stay overnight with a friend, for example, just making sure that, you know, there's dangerous things aren't there.
And so that was the other thing that I shared with the parent too. You know, one of the most important things is that access to means is restricted. And what I mean by that is, you know, if the person made an attempt by trying to overdose on medication, you know, it's likely that they would still try that same way again in the future. But just to be safe, it's important that, you know, I was telling her that before her daughter came home, you know, make sure that any medications, and it could be Tylenol, you know, you can take lethal amounts of Tylenol. So you just want to make sure maybe that any medications in your home are locked up. you know, where your, you know, your teen doesn't have access to those. And there's a great organization called Lock and Talk Virginia, which is an initiative of one of our community services board here, but has gone statewide in Virginia, and they'll provide a free lockbox. But sometimes you don't have that kind of time. So you just want to make sure that you have a lockbox. If there are any guns in your home or weapons of any kind in your home, just make sure that those are locked up too, again, so you don't have access to those. And things that you may not think about, you know, razor blades, things like that, it wouldn't hurt to go ahead and lock those up too. And as you said, you know, it does change things going forward. You know, the parent really needs to be the guardian in this case. And if they are going to stay overnight with a friend or going to a friend's house for some period of time, and you're still worried that they're in, you know, the suicidal state in any way, you know, you definitely want to have a talk with that person's parents too, and just encourage the same kind of thing. Just lock up medications, you know, guns, anything in the house that, you know, that could prove to be lethal. That's just being on the safe side.
And going away from just teens, because, you know, you can, parents can to some degree have influence that over their children that maybe you can't have over your friends or your family members who are adults. Let's take to there. You know, a thought that was popping in my head is in this era again, you know, it's we maybe are seeing people less than we certainly did before the COVID pandemic and the government response. And anytime it seems like addressing when you think maybe friends are having trouble can be a problem. You can feel like you're intervening and maybe being nosy, you're pushing and that kind of thing. But there are signs. I mean, and so if you see, for example, maybe posts from a friend or a family member on social media that maybe concerns you, if you hear something in their voice when you talk to them on the phone or maybe when you see them, how can a person who has concerns about a friend broach this with that friend? You've done this, Crystal. I mean, and you've actually, I think, had success with this. But how can a person who maybe senses something in a friend, how can they address this in a way that, you know, they can feel comfortable with, but also be very helpful with?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to at first being a listener. You know, or if you're hearing things that are worrisome to you, and those can be things like, you know, this world would be better without me. It can be things that someone's doing, you know, if they talk about, or you somehow see increased alcohol use, you know, you're really looking for changes in behavior. If someone's giving away something that you feel like is very important to them or something like that, you know, then that's something that you might want to pay attention to. And like you said, with social media, there's all kinds of clues usually, you know, that someone might be having thoughts of suicide. And I think that it's very important that as a friend or family member, you don't necessarily have to take everything, you know, on, but you do want to have a conversation with that person. And if you're concerned about them, you can't talk your way around that. You know, you do have to directly ask them, you know, are you having thoughts of suicide? You know, there are classes that are taught throughout the world, and I happen to be a Safe Talk trainer, which is one of several classes that are offered in this area. And like you said, mostly on hiatus right now, unfortunately, due to COVID-19 and just not bringing in those numbers, because generally we work in a group of about 20 people. And so if you're social distancing, you know, it's the amount of space that we usually have to work with, the limited number of people that you could have in those would prove to be a challenge right now. But anyone can play a role in suicide prevention, and you could do that by asking directly about suicide. And if someone says they're having thoughts of suicide, it doesn't mean that you need to take it all on yourself related to that. But you do want to kind of make sure, okay, is this something that's imminent right now? Is this someone who's not a threat right now, but that you're worried about? You know, the best thing that you can do is try to make sure that there's a safety plan in place, and that person knows when they're having thoughts of suicide, you are a person that they can go to, or that they have a person that they can go to, you know. And sometimes that's a friend or family member. Sometimes it's just someone that they trust that they can go to. But then having a conversation with that person to make sure that they're going to be available. So it's usually good to have one or two people that if you're, you know, if you personally are having thoughts of suicide, you know, you can go to that person, or, you know, you can connect to that person. So sometimes, you know, in the cases, it's a family member, but sometimes it's someone else completely, a friend or someone that you can connect them with. But have a safety plan. You know, if there's a direct threat of suicide, you know, you want to get that person to the emergency room. And unfortunately, that's usually the solution, is getting them to there for immediate care. And you can take them yourself, you know, as long as you don't feel like you're putting yourself in harm's way. You never want to do that. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's important that you do listen. I mean, that's mainly what you're looking for. And trainings will teach you, and especially if you have an opportunity to take some of these classes I'm talking about, most of them are LivingWorks programs. And LivingWorks is just something that you can Google later if you're interested. But they're, you know, Safe Talk, Assist. They can teach you either just to be a suicide alert helper, meaning that you kind of recognize if someone needs help in the community, and then you pass them on to someone who's trained more like an intervention style. The intervention training really teaches you to kind of take it to the next step. Instead of just connecting with someone, all of a sudden you're listening for turning points. You know, you're trying to make sure they don't have access to those means. And you were talking about other people other than teens earlier, Chris. And one of the things that you can do is if you're worried about someone in your life and they're at a point right now where they can have a discussion about it, you know, you can always ask, have you thought about, you know, how you would do that? And then if someone says, well, you know, we have guns in the basement or something like that, then at a point where they're not suicidal, you know, you can always ask, you know, you're having thoughts of suicide right now. Do you think it would be a good idea for me to keep those guns for a little while? And you can remove those guns as a friend or a family member from their home just until they get the help that they need. You're not permanently removing them, just taking them out while there's a situation. So that's something that you can think about there as well. So I think the most important thing that you can do, you know, in any household, if you're worried about someone, is just try to create, you know, a safe, nurturing, listening environment.
I think also just so important in general is that, I mean, Crystal, we talk about this all the time around our home office and among our friends. And because of the work you've done for all these years, you know, it's a personal thing for you. Your twin sister died at age 15, so almost 30 years ago in your case. And this has been a crusade for you for a long, long time. But, you know, there's this interesting dichotomy in the way we treat health, and I say we as a society treat health. We treat physical health as well. If you get cancer, if you get some ailment, you know, no one says anything bad about you. You got cancer, you got whatever, you know, whatever ailment you got. But if a person is diagnosed with a mental health issue, there is still some stigma for some reason attached to that. Like there's some deficiency in that person, like something in their psyche or something in their soul that's wounded. And it's not, it's the same as a physical ailment. It's something that you want people to be able to address, and they need help just like a cancer patient needs positivity in their life so they can improve on their physical health. You need to have support from your family, your friends, your network to deal with mental health. And boy, if we could just as a society overcome this treating people who have mental health conditions like they're lesser people, I think we'd go a long way to being able to really confront this up front.
Yeah, and that's another thing that everyone can do is in some ways normalize mental health. I mean, just like physical health, just like if someone has a heart attack or had surgery and, you know, we're reaching out to make sure that they're okay, you know, the same thing is true about mental health. You know, if you know someone who's dealing with depression or anxiety or anything of that nature, it's just having a conversation with them about it. And you want to make sure it's in a safe environment and that, you know, generally speaking, that they're on their own, but also it's okay to talk about that. I mean, if there is something that is, you know, that is different between, you know, someone who struggles and someone who doesn't in their brain, you know, obviously that's something that just like a physical ailment, you know, that you need to get help for. And so encouraging people to seek help for those kinds of conditions. In most cases, men are harder to get to treatment than women. You know, most men see themselves as being the providers of their families and having to be tough. And so instead of seeking treatment, they often look to suicide when things get really difficult, especially if there's someone, you know, who has these underlying health conditions, whether it's, you know, bipolar or depression or something of that nature, even anxiety, you know. And with COVID, those things are all ramped up and we're all, people who struggle are struggling even more right now. So, you know, especially if you know someone who struggles, you know, having more conversations, making sure to touch base a little more often, you know, those are all things that can help people through this, and letting them know that, you know, everything that they're going through is perfectly normal, in the sense that, you know, in the sense that just like a physical health condition, it's a mental health condition. You can encourage things. You know, I always say, don't offer advice. And that's mostly what I'm talking about is, you know, when someone's in the throes of having, you know, suicidal ideation, thinking of suicide right at that moment, but encouraging, you know, healthy things in their life go a long way. You know, encouraging them to take a walk or offering to go on a walk with them, you know, just in general, healthier eating, getting good sleep, you know, all those things are very positive to people who struggle with mental health. And you'll talk to people every day, you know, and one of the things is, some people say therapy doesn't work for me, but what does work for me is, you know, working out on a regular basis or something like that. And so it's different for everyone, and you have to find that right fit for everyone. You know, even though I say therapy and in some cases medication are important, that's not the right fit for someone. You know, it may be that listening to music, finding ways for self-care, finding ways to relax, taking yoga, you know, there are other ways that other people deal with their mental health condition that may not require some of those things. So, but encouraging a healthy lifestyle usually goes a long way for someone who's struggling.
Yeah, the thing that bothers me the most about the official government public health response to COVID-19 is that it has put the most vulnerable people in every walk of life. School kids have been left to fend for themselves, and that's not working. Education is not working right now. Physical health is suffering. You know, for months gyms were closed. A lot of people are still afraid to go back to gyms. The obesity epidemic is only going to get worse. We've seen numbers about the opioid overdose epidemic. There was a study on our website just a couple of weeks ago about a VCU study that showed that more than doubled in the first 3 months of the pandemic, the number of opioid overdoses at the VCU Medical Center. And in a mental health area, you know, mental health is most served by, one, having great, you know, having opportunities to walk, like you said, walk around, have physical health, have good physical health that it translates into a positive feeling about yourself, and your brain can kind of clear out a bit. Our connections with each other, whether it be family or friends, have been limited as a result of this. I'm going to encourage people to, as much as you can within this the realm of safety you feel, reach out to people. You know, Crystal, you mentioned a movie we watched the other night. It was called Social Dilemma. Mm-hmm. And that movie showed how our over-reliance on technology, the little phones we have in our hands constantly that buzz at us and tell us when we're supposed to look at it, has actually made things worse for us in a lot of ways. Use, though, I mean, if it's all you feel comfortable doing, use your social media for positive. Reach out to friends on Facebook Messenger or on Twitter, or just a text message. Mm-hmm. Ask how they're doing. Make sure they're doing okay. Maybe, you know, have a conversation. There's a couple of friends I've only communicated with the last few months by text, but we communicate regularly. We have a good time. We chat, we joke, we talk politics, whatever else. And at least then you have that contact. They know they can contact you. You can contact them. But man, oh man, we can't just touch phones. We can't just touch buttons and have connections. We've got to connect with people. And you know, the more we can do that, the better I think we're all going to be. And so hopefully that positive message can come out.
Well, and just remember that even though we're not doing a ton of trainings right now because of COVID-19, they will come back. But in the meantime, if you're worried about a friend or a loved one, they don't have to be suicidal at that very moment. There are trained volunteers throughout the nation, and there's a suicide prevention lifeline. And you can Google that at any time. But I tell everybody, like, to put that in your phone. You never know when you're going to be in a situation where you might need that advice. And this isn't something where if you come across someone who is, you know, obviously, who has already made an attempt for something, you want to dial 911. But if you're looking for advice, you know, if whether you are the person who is struggling, or whether you know someone that is struggling, whether it's your son, your daughter, your neighbor, you know, someone that you're just worried about, there are trained volunteers who can answer that call. And the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, it's still an 800 number right now. They're working to get a 3-digit code in place, not quite there yet. But in the meantime, you can call 1-800-273 8255. And if you just Google National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, that'll come up. There's a chat feature that you can use your phone on that as well. If you're more comfortable in a chat type of environment versus a phone call, you know, I'm sure because the suicide rate's up, you know, that those numbers could, you know, be a little slower for someone to answer, but someone will answer and hopefully give you some advice for whatever situation that you're dealing with. So I do encourage you to put that number in your phone just in case a time arises and you might need it.
If you yourself are dealing with struggles, use those resources. If you are a family member or a friend of someone and you're worried about someone, Crystal has armed you with some information and strategies for how to help that person through. And I'm sure Crystal's also the digital editor of Augusta Free Press. It will surprise me immensely. Those who are watching this on the archive, who are listening to our podcast, if you go to our website and to our Facebook page, we'll have those resources available for you. So you don't have to look them up yourself, but we'll track those down and put those on this this thread and then on our site and that kind of thing too. Crystal, final thoughts on this topic as we wrap up talking about suicide prevention and the end of Suicide Prevention Month in the United States.
Yeah, I always just say trust your gut. You know, if you're worried about someone, you know, have that conversation with them. You know, it's a very hard thing to ask a son or a daughter or a friend or a family member if, you know, are you having thoughts of suicide? But you would much rather have that conversation now. It's not putting a thought in their head by asking the question. That's very important to point out. You know, it's very important though that if they are having those thoughts, that you can get them the help that they need now, and that you can connect them with a therapist, or you can, you know, let someone know that you can create a safety plan, and that you can keep that person alive, because that's the most important thing at the end of the day. So I definitely encourage you to call the Lifeline if you're ever in a situation where you feel like you need more advice, or there are tons of online resources available too. There's many national nonprofits. As Chris said, I worked for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. That's one that you can look up, but there's there's dozens of organizations that deal with suicide prevention. And so if you need information, if you need books to read, you can find that information online. So I highly encourage you to do your research if you're worried about someone. And just in all situations, remember just to listen. I mean, more than anything, more than offering advice, most of the time, people who are struggling just need someone who will listen to them.
Well, Crystal, I want to thank you for sharing your expertise in this field. Normally, when we do podcasts together, you're asking me questions about the important and weighty world of college football or college basketball, you know, but this podcast and this Facebook Live may be the most important one we've done this year. And thank you for helping spread awareness and information on this important topic.